This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Paul Spencer is the founder and editor of The Hook, and he joins me live in studio. How are you, Mr. Spencer? It's good to see you.
Thank you, Coy. It's beautiful to see you as well.
It is an absolutely stunning day, is it not? One of the first really nice spring days. Hard to be inside today.
Yeah, my uniform, which is like a sport coat and a couple of shirts, is feeling a little toasty today. But guess what I did last night?
What?
I watched Two and a Half Men for the first time.
Really? As part of a journalist research into a story?
Well, because everybody's been talking about this show because there was some problem with one of the stars or something.
He's a winner. He's winning. Yeah. Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
Got kicked off the show, but evidently he's been doing it for almost 10 years, right?
Well, dude, the show I watched last night was like about his life. He's kind of like a naughty guy.
Yeah. Anyway. So I've never seen the show. I have no idea what it's about. But would you recommend it to friends?
Not really. I mean, American sitcom
is so good.
But it must be a big hit if he's making all these millions of dollars per show or whatever, right?
Yeah, not anymore.
Not anymore.
I guess.
But he lives in a house with like a guy who appears to be gay or something and the guy's son.
Okay.
But then he has like a girlfriend, whatever.
So you were riveted.
Oh, man. I was just on the edge of my seat.
And then you flipped over to Top Chef.
No, then I went back to my Seinfeld DVDs.
There you go. Hoss Spencer is with us. It's 5:11 in Charlottesville. And let's get a temperature update here. It's almost 80 degrees still.
It's toasty, Coy.
It is so nice outside. Just a beautiful day. Mm-hmm. Hoss Spencer, of course, we were just talking in the last hour with Jamie Graham.
Thanks for introducing me to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, years ago, when I was working with you at the SIVA Weekly, we did a big story about Operation Equinox and Jamie's story. And you are going to be running that with an update soon.
Yes.
Let folks know that The Hook is going to be
very soon.
Updating the Operation Equinox story.
Yes. Maybe somebody will beat me to it because not soon enough. I only have a certain amount of space. And actually, one of our writers who contributes occasionally, Barbara Norden, who many people may remember as the Fearless Consumer.
Yeah, I remember that.
She's done a bunch of stories around town. She wanted to put her big pièce de résistance up online.
Because it's another anniversary.
She's got big anniversary story about a guy who disappeared from UVA back in 1986. And so I acceded to her request, and we put that story online a week early. And it's an amazing tale. I mean, with all this talk in the news this year and last year of Morgan Harrington, when she, of course, was missing for several months, and of course her killing has not been solved. There's another UVA. Well, obviously she's Virginia Tech, but there was a UVA student who disappeared, was most likely murdered, but the UVA cops said that he must have walked away from his life, and they've never given the family any shred of understanding why they said this, and the family thinks it's pure cover-up, that the cops simply mishandled evidence, moved in a wrong direction, and then just tried to cover their tracks by saying, well, he must have walked away. But
it was handled very differently than Morgan Harrington's story. Right?
Very differently. And one of the most amazing things Barbara Norden did, and one of the very good things that she did, was she tracked down the FBI agent whose letter had been used to validate the efforts of the UVA Police Department in this case. And it turns out that today he's sorry he wrote the letter, and he's sorry that the evidence was handled the way it was. And he's
going on the record now saying, I lied.
Well, he didn't say he lied. He said, I was trying to take some heat off him, and I didn't realize how paltry their investigation was. And the idea that this guy walked away from his life is just ridiculous.
We're talking with Hoss Spencer of The Hook. It's 5:13 in Charlottesville, a beautiful afternoon. And this story, of course, is it's in this week's Hook, or was it?
This story that Barbara Norden wrote will be in next week's Hook.
And it's online now.
It's online
with
now.
With photographs of Pat Collins, the young man who was a medical student, right?
27-year-old graduate physiology student who's going to get a doctorate in cellular physiology.
I would like to think, and I think I've got a lot to go on here to say this, to make this claim, but I believe that if it happened today that there was a medical student at the University of Virginia who literally disappeared, like you just, it's, his car's still there, his bikes are still there, his clothes are still there, he just disappeared, that there would be much more, a much beefier investigation. We'd be talking about it on the radio all the time. There would be searches, search teams. There'd be press conferences. But that's not what happened when Pat Collins disappeared, was it?
You know, it's not what happened. And I'd like to think that's what would happen. One of the things that was different was the UVA police never gave up jurisdiction. They, even though they had never handled a homicide before, they absolutely insisted that they were capable of handling this case. But the cop who arrived on the scene started handling the guy's personal effects instead of dusting them for fingerprints, and started telling the family that he must have gone off, you know, away, or not telling the family, but telling his faculty advisor that he must have just had a bad breakup or a failed exam, neither of which was true.
There was no evidence for any of that.
No, it was just wishful thinking. And instead of admitting that they might have made a mistake, the UVA Police Department just dug in deeper. And, you know, they are an accredited police department, but they, I don't know how you can say that they didn't completely botch this case. They didn't interview neighbors. They didn't interview the landlady of this guy.
Yeah.
They interviewed just a few members of the department where the guy was studying. And they missed forensic evidence in the guy's apartment. A calendar page that was missing from his calendar. A cigarette butt in his trash can. There wasn't a forensic investigation of any of these things that we're aware of.
Yeah. And in all fairness to the University of Police today, this is 25, 26 years ago, right? I mean, this just...
It's probably a little bit different department today.
Yeah. I would have liked to imagine that today it would be handled extremely differently. And yep. And we have seen with the disappearance of Morgan Harrington, the University of Police, I mean, the facts are there. They have handled this kind of thing very differently, way out in front of the story. Lots of searches, lots of involving the community in the searches, keeping the story alive. And they did find this woman's body, and they continued to look for the killer.
They turned the Morgan Harrington case over to the Virginia State Police almost immediately, which, you know, the chief back then just didn't do that. And there's actually a bill that went before the General Assembly this year to try to push serious crimes away from campus cops under the idea that, you know, we had there's a woman who spoke here in Charlottesville today at noon, Liz Sicuro.
Oh, yeah.
She's the author of a new memoir about her alleged, well, it's not alleged anymore because a conviction occurred. She says that she was raped in a fraternity house in that same era. And she spoke as part of the Virginia Festival of the Book. And anyway, what I was getting at was there's this bill called, it was going to be called Catherine's Law, which was put forward by the mother of a UVA rape victim who never got any prosecution done at all. And, you know, that was even more recent, but they got this bill, and it's going to go before the Virginia Crime Commission, but it would kind of push these crimes, these serious crimes, away from the campus cops and give them to police departments that have a little bit more experience with them.
We're talking with Hoss Spencer of The Hook. It's 517 in Charlottesville, and Woody is with us down in North Garden. Woody, what's going on today?
Hey, Hoss.
Hey, Woody.
I apologize to you about the ticket on The Hook.
The ticket on The
Hook. He was picking on the hook last time. Yeah.
Remember the stink bugs?
Yeah.
Dude, you can pick on The Hook all you want. I'm sure the UVA police is going to love me today,
I love it. I got to love it so much.
Yeah. So what's on your mind, Woody?
Well, the thing about this, Abshire.
Abshire? You mean the thing up in Orange?
The man who is in jail.
Yes.
He finally arrested Abshire for killing his wife?
Yeah. Allegedly killing his wife.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Beautiful, gorgeous, pretty girl.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, like, how many years did it take us to go get this guy?
Yeah. That's a very good story.
You were talking about the Collins, of course. That could be different. These are women.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, do you think... Woody, that's a great point, and thanks for bringing it up. Hawes, do you think it was handled differently because this was a guy? And he was older? He was a medical student? He wasn't... You know, versus an 18-year-old, you know, first-year woman?
Absolutely. There were several really unfortunate factors that conspired to delay the realization of what happened to this guy. One was he was living in the basement apartment in Belmont, and his landlady, on the like the morning after he disappeared, the very morning after, she's elderly, and she's been watching the house like a hawk. She's like a... Her sister described her as a mother hen, and she has some sort of a medical condition that puts her in the hospital for weeks. And so the one person in this new town where he had moved who would see him all the time is suddenly rendered out of the picture. So she's not blowing the whistle and saying, hey, where is this guy? Secondly, you know, he's been in Charlottesville 10 weeks. He doesn't have that many acquaintances in Charlottesville. He just moved here from San Jose, California. Thirdly, his classes consist of a large lecture where, you know, it's like, you know, 100 people or so. You don't really notice if somebody's missing. And then these seminars, which were kind of team taught by various experts in the physiology field.
Not a lot of personal connections.
So it's
there.
Just not a lot of personal connection. And it was, and so 2 weeks elapsed before somebody said, hey, has anybody seen Pat?
Was there any evidence at all that he did just take off? Wouldn't his bank account cleared out?
No. See, that was one of the mistakes or lies, depending on who you talk to, that the UVA police added into this picture was they told the reporters that he had cleared out his bank accounts, and actually he hadn't. He had taken, in fact, one of the transactions that was deemed evidence of him clearing out his bank account was a $200 ATM transaction. Well, it turns out his family found that was that was cash to go to Anderson Brothers bookstore on the corner
to buy his books
and to pick up a set of 7 physiology textbooks that he had ordered. And,
so if the bank account is any evidence at all, it's evidence that he was planning to stay and was not going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, his faculty advisor said this guy was brimming with enthusiasm for physiology and brimming for enthusiasm for learning. And we have a photograph of his study carrel in Jordan Hall right there on Jefferson Park Avenue of the 7 physiology textbooks sitting there that he had just picked up a day or two before.
And there never was any sign of him. He just, 1986, literally, this kid just vanished off the planet. No word at all. No leads. Nothing ever since.
Really nothing. There's some brilliant conjecture in this article about possible scenarios, and there's some tantalizing clues. But unfortunately, because the UVA Police Department didn't interview very many people and didn't do forensic testing, I mean, they left a cigarette butt. The guy didn't smoke, but there was a cigarette butt found in his kitchen trash can. Well, I was a reporter in 1986. Virginia had DNA testing. I don't know if they could test cigarette butts that well back then, but the science of DNA testing was emerging.
Yeah.
And cases have been solved.
Well, and at the very least, just save it.
Save it.
You know, put it in a baggie and put it on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that's not in the story was when they handed a bunch of his personal effects over to the family, and the family wasn't aware of what they had. They got back to California, and they're like, oh my God, they handed us Pat's wallet and his ID and all this stuff. This is evidence. And so they mailed it back and said, use this, you know, see if there's anything to get from this. But of course, by then, you know, the chain of custody has been broken. The people have touched it.
Yeah.
The guy knew. See, the father of Pat Collins, or the stepfather, I should say, was a retired San Jose police officer himself who had a history of working on homicide cases.
Oh, my gosh.
And so he comes into town and says, what are you doing? And they're like, don't you tell us what to do. We know what we're doing. And it became like this clash of wills.
And they never found Pat Collins. And there was never sign of struggle, never sign of an attack or anything. He just disappeared.
Absolutely.
UVA med student, 1986.
Yeah.
The complete story, Barbara Norden's complete update and investigative report about the disappearance of Pat Collins in 1986 is available online at readthehook.com. And you can check it out this week in this week's Hook. Paul Spencer is live in studio. You remember this song? This is a big song.
That's huge, Coy.
It was huge.
Bay City Rollers.
They were great, weren't they?
I had a fan.
What happened to them? Are they dead or alive, those guys? They have like a big bus accident or something?
Their manager got indicted for some sort of pedophilia thing.
Okay, well, anyway, happy Friday, everybody. I hope you're doing well. I'm 536 in Charlottesville. So you were telling me during the break that you... for the first time in your life, you ate tripe.
Yeah.
And I said, what is tripe?
Well, Coy, I'm glad you asked. Tripe is the...
Did you pull up the Wikipedia page?
Yeah. Tripe is usually made from only the first three chambers of a cow's stomach.
Usually
just the first three chambers.
Yeah,
Coy.
Well, when you go past three, then you're really getting awful there. Uh-huh. You get a little too chewy.
Actually, you know what? I felt like I could see the cilia on the...
Oh, my gosh.
But wait a minute.
Why? But wait, there's more.
I had the rare opportunity to get slipped into Peter Chang's new restaurant at Barracks Road.
I've heard about it, yeah.
Yeah,
This is where the tripe is.
This is where the tripe is.
Yeah.
And they said, do you want to order or do you just want the chef's specialties?
Ooh.
And we said... Chef specialties,
special away,
baby.
Special away. Give me that click double point.
So yeah, that's right. So this one dish brought to our table was called beef tendon and tripe, and get this. So you're staring at this plate of unusual meats.
Yeah, to say the least.
Thinly sliced, and then you bite into it, and it's cold.
Really?
It was like intentionally, it's a cold dish. It's a very spicy dish with the kind of a red hot sauce. But you know what was weird? It was really good.
You're kidding. I thought you were going to say that. Oh, gross.
I went back.
So you cautiously.
I was terrified. I'm taking a bite of this thing. First of all, it's cold to my tongue. I think it's going to be hot. You know, because usually when you order beef at a restaurant, it's
not
sizzling,
served cold. Yeah,
not served cold.
comes out Chi-Chi style.
Yeah,
to your table. Yeah,
right. But it was delish.
Wow,
just one of the many savory dishes.
And the tendon, where did that come from? Because there's lots of tendons in the animal, right?
Yeah, I don't know which tendon. Maybe it was the Achilles tendon.
Was it real chewy? What did it taste like? What's?
It had a firmness to it. Both the tripe and the tendon seemed to have a firmness to them, but they were both very delicious.
There's something very unappetizing about the word firm when you're talking about like meat.
Yeah,
it's like yeah. It had a certain firmness to it. But it was just, taste as well.
Yeah, just don't stare at it. And it would be better if they gave it a name, you know, like if they give testicles a name. When
like
they
instead of saying hog, they say pork. Something
right.
about it. It sounds a little nicer. Hot dog.
Right. At the CNO, though, they often serve you, they'll serve you sweetbreads, and if you ask what it is, they'll say thymus. The thymus gland.
I don't even know what that is.
Well, I always...
Part of the foot?
No, it's a gland. It's part of your innards, my man.
Oh, man.
But see, the thing is, I've always heard that it's smart to order the most disgusting sounding thing on the menu because it wouldn't be on the menu if it didn't, you know, have some value to it.
Oh, and you're just saying it's undiscovered. Like, it's really, really good, but people don't eat it because it's so disgusting sounding.
Yeah, I mean, if this world-famous chef has the nerve to serve you something that sounds sort of disgusting... I think you'd be wise to give it a shot.
And you liked it. You had seconds in the tripe.
I did. I actually ate most of that tripe plate. I was stealing pieces away from my dining mates.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Hey, Roger Voisney was in from the Main Street Arena the other day.
Oh, yeah?
And I think broke some news here that I thought was really interesting, that Main Street Arena now, they're going to, they're not going to do it tomorrow because I'm going ice skating tomorrow, but they're going to cover the ice or take it up because you're just sand underneath.
Oh, right.
They're going to have all sorts of different events in there, and they're going to start having big musical events in there.
Well,
so
yeah.
It's like going to be a pavilion on the other end of the mall, and they just signed some big famous country music star, but he couldn't remember her name. It's a woman that he said is very, very famous, and she's going to play there.
Well, speaking of country music star, tickets went on sale today to see Lucinda Williams at the Paramount.
Lucinda. It's a pretty name, but I have no idea who she is.
She's a country music star. But, you know, interesting that you mentioned the Main Street Arena because the big news this week has been a little feud going on between the owner of the Main Street Arena and the guy who, the Hollywood director who pumped $3 million. Well, actually, they both pumped $3 million, but into very different visions. Hollywood director Tom Shadyac pumped $3 million into creating the Haven, a day shelter for the homeless.
Yes. Where that church was.
A former church on,
it's very beautiful.
On Market Street.
You ever been in that building?
Sure.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. And then,
surprised it's not a church anymore, though.
Well,
why wouldn't that be a church?
Because the church sold it to be the Haven.
Okay.
Then Mark Brown pumped $3 million into buying the Main Street Arena.
Which looks beautiful.
Yeah. And they each have a different vision over what should happen with the homeless. The Mark Brown just excoriated the Haven, said that they're inefficient and not accomplishing much, and he used some math that has come under great question in calculating the value of the Haven. And
you know, in my house, any math comes under great question.
I'm sure.
Especially if I have anything to do with it.
Yeah. But
I'm not a math person.
Well, his math hit a nerve with the founder of the Haven, Tom Shadyac, who's a guy who shot to fame with such movies as Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Yeah, yeah.
And Liar, Liar.
And that Noah's Ark movie.
And that Noah's Ark movie that was filmed here. And when he concluded shooting that Noah's Ark movie here, he decided he wanted to give something back to the community, and he gave it in the form of the Haven, which offers job hunting tips and hot showers, I think, and
bathrooms
and meals and services for people who are down on their luck.
But Mark Brown doesn't like downtown mall being a place for that kind of thing.
Mark Brown said
it's off the mall.
Well, he had, Mark Brown very famously a few months ago had attempted to discourage people from giving money to beggars and urge them to, he was trying to create an ad campaign that would funnel money directly to the Haven itself under the idea that if you give money to beggars, it's going to just be converted into beverages.
Yes, yes. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, there is, apparently, there's actually studies that kind of back that up.
Really?
Most of that money does, in fact,
end up in beverages.
Turn into
given to the
alcoholic beverages.
The 7-Eleven counterman. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. But not all of it.
Not all of it, of course.
But most of it.
So Mark's point is, and many people have said this, why don't you just give it to an organization
that
provides
right.
meals and helps people get jobs. And
that's right.
And
and so he got into a feud with a board member earlier of the Haven who said, hey, there's a constitutional right to beg. I don't know if there really is.
Is it really?
Well, that's what he said. You know, I don't think it's ever been...
Is that a kind of free speech?
I didn't... The word is not really in the Constitution, but I think the board member infers that the freedom to petition your government, the freedom of speech seems... could be construed to...
But, you know, I will just say this as an aside, and then we'll take a break, but the people who work in this field, who work helping these people... I think they're the first ones to tell you, because I've interviewed them before. I mean, they're the first ones to tell you that there is a lot of substance abuse. There's people with lots of health problems, and we do get help for them, and we help people get off their whatever that, you know, if they really want to help themselves, we can help them do that. And then there's other people that are taking accessing these services that are simply just down on their luck, and they need a place to sleep for a few nights.
Well,
these are good people who have jobs. But they just can't afford a place to live.
Yeah, I don't think the Haven gives you a place to sleep. It gives you a nice place during the day.
Yeah.
And then they'll kind of help you talk about places to sleep. And they're trying to help you get your life back in order because they were trying to fill a need or a gap that they saw in the array of services provided locally.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.